Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Shallow by Randy Cooley Wilson. Narrated by Verla Bond and Michael Ramsey. Shallow people leave the deepest wounds. Tibor Tselarik. Shallow. Adjective. Of little depth. Do you remember the first time you fell in love? The kind where every moment blurs into the next? Where there is no beginning or end? All I've known is shallow love. Until him. Prologue. Rebel. 12 years ago. Tilting my head, I follow the chaotic brushstrokes with my eyes. The deep blue and dark gray colors on the small canvas make the water appear as if it's cold. My focus slides over the image and then down to the title on the bronze plaque underneath it. Heartache. The darkness of the seemingly tumultuous water in the painting makes me long for the salty ocean air and the sound of crashing waves. I grew up near the water. It can be cruel at times. I wonder if the artist lost something or someone to the sea's cruelty. Maybe that's the reason for the melancholy title, for the quick brushstrokes, for the dark chaos marring the small framed white canvas. Then again, what do I know? I haven't the first clue about art or artists. Why I thought taking a fine art seminar in my senior year of college in Paris would be romantic is beyond me. I've spent an excessive amount of my evening staring at the renowned painting with no better understanding of it than when I first arrived at the gallery. In my personal opinion, it lacks any attempt to draw my attention to a singular focal point. And since there is no focal point, there is no way for me to decipher the artist's thematic ideas, which is the whole reason I'm here at the Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris. I checked the time on my cell. It's late. My thematic critique paper is due tomorrow. I'm so screwed. Leaning forward, I bend over the crimson velvet security rope, trying to get a closer look. My stubborn nature wants one final attempt at finding the painting's theme. Another millimeter and you'll sit off the alarms, a deep, velvety voice says. Startled by the voice's unexpected presence, I stand taller and slowly look over at the guy who is now standing next to me. He's ignoring me, his eyes fixated on the painting. Not knowing what to say and feeling a little uncomfortable, I silently stare at the light smattering of hair on his strong jawline, which is clenched tightly as if I'm the one who interrupted him and not the other way around. Under the scruff, his skin is tan, golden, which makes his facial hair barely noticeable. If it weren't for the display lights bouncing off the museum's white walls or our proximity, I probably wouldn't have even noticed it. Broad shoulders lay hidden under a dark-colored peacoat. Faded black jeans and black boots finish his casual look. A piece of long blonde hair artfully falls over his forehead, styled that way. His hair is longer on top and shorter on the bottom. Sexy, but messy. If I had to guess, I'd say the tall stranger is a few years older than me, maybe 22 or 23. It's hard to tell from my position. One thing is for sure, he looks like an angel. A flawless, golden one that fell from heaven and became dark and tortured. He runs a free hand through the hair hanging loosely over his forehead, and his stormy gray eyes slide off the painting, locking onto mine. I try not to wilt under his gaze before he snaps it back to the canvas, immersing himself deeply into it. Confused with this strange encounter we're having, I pinch my brows and watch him with an odd fascination as he studies the image with appreciation. It's obvious he's one of those people who enjoy art. He takes it in as if the painting's melody hypnotizes him. I don't know very much about Impressionism or this watercolor, but I can tell he does. It's in his blood, like breathing. I frown, never having felt a connection that way about something. Feeling as if I'm intruding, I turn my attention back to the painting to give him a private moment, one where I'm not gawking at him. "Why are you scrutinizing this piece of art if it doesn't appeal to you?" he asks. A shiver runs over me, because I'm inexplicably drawn to his voice. It has a hint of velvet sensuality in a strangely dark and rugged way. A bit unsettled at my attraction to him, I close my eyes, attempting to get a grip on myself. How did he know I didn't like it? "I'm trying to understand its meaning, the artist's theme," I mutter. "What is it you see when you look at it?" he asks. His lips brush against my ear. Surprised by his sudden closeness, I take in a sharp breath and my eyes slowly flutter open. When my gaze meets his, I blurt out the first thing I think of. "Blue and gray." A small smile carrying a tiny bit of intrigue graces his lips. At the sight, my stomach does a small flip, and I tear my eyes away from him before I ultimately make more of a fool out of myself. He chuckles at me like he knows he made me feel crazy for a moment. "Impressive assessment." His voice redirects my attention back to him. "What is it you see?" I challenge. "That in the darkness of chaos, we find the true nature of humanity," he replies. I search his face, taken aback at the deep meaning he seems to have found in what I view as a simple watercolored painting of the ocean. He gives me an intensely dark look. "Try again." His voice is low and seductive. I feel my cheeks flush as I try to find the words. The truth is, I see something in his eyes that I can't quite explain. It's a mix of danger and desire that sets my heart racing. I see the power of the ocean," I stutter. "The way it ebbs and flows, powerful yet unpredictable." He nods, his eyes never leaving mine. "Yes, but there's more to it than that. There's a sense of freedom in the chaos, a sense of release that we can't find in the calmness." A shiver runs down my spine at his words, and I realize that he's not just talking about the painting anymore. Even though we're strangers, there's something between us, something electric and dangerous. It's anything but calm. It's intense and messy. We're standing so close that I can feel the heat of his body against mine. "Actually, I'm trying to find the focal point," I whisper.
"Why?"
"For an art assignment." My words barely make it past my lips before he steps closer, his tall frame towering over me.
"The focal point isn't just whatever the eye chooses to see," he says, his tone low and hypnotic. "On the contrary."
He gestures to a few strokes embedded deep within the artwork.
"In this painting, the artist is manipulating what you see with linear paths."
I catch a hint of an accent lining his voice. It's not French. Australian, maybe? "So, you're saying the illusion of depth is manipulating me, my feelings toward this piece?" I lean toward him, caught under the spell of our momentary connection.
"That is what art does. It makes you feel."
He pauses.
"On its terms, not yours."
At the intensity of his statement, I lick my lips. My whole body trembles,
It's like my heart is trying to break free from my chest. Something about his words have me feeling oddly unsteady. My pulse quickens as the spicy scent of his cologne wraps around us. I swallow, trying to quench the sudden dryness in the back of my throat. What if I've never felt the way it wants me to? I ask, staring at the painting. I'm not sure I've ever loved something or someone deeply enough to feel this level of heartache, I admit. My confession hangs in the air like a distant lullaby. A strange, quiet tension grows between us with each passing second. In the silence of the museum, my heartbeat echoes in my ears. An odd sort of internal battle becomes evident in his stillness. It's unnerving. Without warning, he reaches out and gently clasps my trembling hand, a single touch that awakens something deep within me, a secret connection that exists only between us. He raises my hand to his lips with a deliberate slowness, and time seems to come to a stop. My senses are heightened, acutely attuned to every touch and moment during this unexpected encounter. Spellbound, I watch as he gently presses his lips to my heated skin. The featherlight touch imprints onto my soul in a way that I can't explain. Our eyes remain locked, refusing to release their hold. It's as if we're both afraid to let go of this moment. The world around us fades into non-existence. In the peaceful silence of the gallery, I find myself breathless, suspended between reality and the dream of him. Time becomes a mere illusion. In this instant, all that matters is this unspoken language passing between us. Every fiber of my being yearns for more. Yet for some reason, I know the fragility of this moment will be short-lived. The air crackles, heavy with unspoken promises, as we stand on the precipice of something which is unexplainably forbidden and irresistible. After a long moment, he reluctantly releases my hand. Tucked in the shadows, hidden behind his eyes, are love and desperation, longing and guilt. His emotions are so torn that all I feel seeping off him is pure heartache. He's broken. Even without knowing him, I know I am done for in his presence. If I get too close, let him in. This stranger will tear my heart into oblivion. I'd never recover. Not ever. The scars he'd leave would be deep. Do you feel it now? He rasps. I nod in response, not trusting my own voice. I keep my attention on his stormy eyes as if they're an anchor. They're precise and calculated as they study me. With one look, it feels as though he's woken me up from 20 years of slumber. The stranger lets his gaze linger on my face before slowly moving it down, looking me over with appreciation. When our eyes meet again, he doesn't say a word. He doesn't need to. The look on his face tells me everything. Inhaling, I wait for his next move, feeling out of sorts. Never taking his eyes away from mine, he slowly steps back, placing much-needed space between us. As he does, cool air settles where he was just standing, causing goosebumps to rise again on my bare arms. His eyes fall onto my skin, and he stares at my reaction to him. The lights in the museum dim, signaling we have only a few moments before it closes. You're very beautiful, he mutters under his breath. Something warms inside of me. I've always thought my blue eyes and light brown, wavy long hair made me plain, ordinary. The way he's looking at me says different. Beauty can be an illusion of perspective, I counter. His expression hardens. Perspective is a basic art concept of focus, not beauty, he states matter-of-factly. As an art major, you should know that better than anyone.
Art has nothing to do with my major.
Which is?
English, writing.
Isn't writing considered a form of art?
He pushes back. To some, maybe, I breathe out.
But not to you?
Inhaling through my nose, I shrug. I don't know yet.
You go to school nearby?
New York University.
NYU, huh?
His lips twitch.
A museum in Paris seems far to travel for a paper.
I'm studying here this semester.
He contemplates my answers. Art has become a Parisian love, then?
Bread and wine certainly have. I joke and release an awkward laugh. When he doesn't respond, I release a long, drawn-out breath in an attempt to pull myself out of this intense, weird space we seem to be in. Whatever this is that's happening between him and me, it feels unsettling. And at the same time, somehow life-changing. I've never been this close to a man as enigmatic as he is. He's mysterious and mesmerizing. He's the kind of guy who makes you forget how to breathe. The type you read about in a book or see come to life in a movie, but not in real life. Shifting on my feet, I look down and then back up into his stark gray eyes. They darken as they take me in, and it takes every ounce of restraint inside of me not to step closer and take his face in my hands to kiss and soothe away whatever is haunting him. I clear my throat. Art is a required class for graduation, I explain. He inhales and nods his understanding, and my nerves jump all over the place.
Are you a student? I manage. No.
An artist? I prod.
No.
We hold one another's gaze, and nothing but stillness exists around us. The museum is quiet and empty. Every rhythmic breath that falls between us feels heightened and unusually meaningful. Being still in the dead of silence with him is strangely comforting. The lights dim again, signaling our time together is ending.
The gallery is closing soon, he states.
It would seem so. I swallow, fearing that I'll never see him again. I don't want to lose whatever this moment is between us.
Before it does, would you help me with something?
With what? With a wicked gleam, he motions around the exhibition hall.
Walk around the room and point out your favorite piece of art. Don't overthink it, just pick what speaks to you.
I tilt my head toward the watercolor we've been standing in front of. I think it's painfully obvious that I know nothing about art. Are you sure you want my opinion? He steps closer and his deep voice turns smooth.
You don't have to know everything about something to appreciate its beauty. For instance, we don't know one another.
We stare at one another for a moment before I feel the heat creep up the back of my neck. Releasing his amazing eyes, I look around the small room, briefly taking in each of the 10 paintings that are in it. After a moment, I point to the piece of art we'd been admiring together. Looking at it, I study the stormy blue and gray colors. They remind me of the stranger's eyes, which I can feel are on me, watching me with a deep intensity. This one, I rasp, giving him a quick glance. He gifts me an amused, knowing smirk.
Good choice.
I smile shyly and turn back to the painting. Why is that? He doesn't reply. When I turn to look at him again, he's gone. Confused, I look around the room, but he's nowhere to be seen. A deep sense of loss and sadness crawls over me.
feeling a little bit of heartache. I give the painting one last longing look. Later that night, that painting vanished from the museum. Stolen. Like something inside of me.
Chapter 1. Rebel. Present day. He said he was allergic to cats. That's why he broke up with me. I drop my head back onto the back of the oversized leather couch and sigh heavily. I don't even own a cat. No response. Nothing. I'll take your silence as confirmation that my life sucks, I mumble. If you think that breakup was shitty, the guy before him broke up with me because I refused to have a threesome with him and his model nanny. I smirk to myself. And yes, for the record, that request was how I found out the asshole was married, with 4 kids and a dog. The sound of a glass being placed on the marble coffee table in front of me has me cracking my eyes open. I narrow my eyes at the water-filled cup before my gaze lifts and I stare at the empty chair across from me. Guess I scared away another male with my charm. Releasing a small, humorless laugh, I lift the champagne glass I've been nursing, sipping on my last sip of the expensive bubbles in it. The champagne tickles my nose. Getting dumped again hurts, more so than I thought it would, I whisper. These past few years have been one wrong guy, one bad relationship after another. My life is a constant stream of terrible decision-making as I try to navigate my way through adulthood. It sucks. Nobody ever tells you that when you turn 32, you become more cynical, crankier, and tired from dealing with other people's bullshit.
I wanted to marry you as soon as we graduated. I wanted you to carry my last name, claim you as mine.
An amused voice reminds me from somewhere in the kitchen.
You said no, a lot. This bad stream of men coming in and out of your life, it's karma.
Buzzed, I snort and laughed softly as I watch my best friend, Matul, walk back into the living room with another bottle of champagne, sidestepping the luggage I've left in the middle of it as he does. He takes my empty champagne glass and fills it again, then hands it back to me. After placing the new bottle on the table next to the empty one I drank alone, he grabs the glass filled with water and plops down next to me on the couch. Are you on call tonight? I ask, eyeing his water.
I am.
Matul and I met during our freshman year at NYU. He was focused on becoming an anesthesiologist, and I was undecided on a major. We were set up on a blind date. I was a nervous, awkward wreck, and in walked this tall, dark, handsome, and confident man. The moment our eyes connected and he flashed me a bright, perfect smile, I knew we could never be a functional couple. There was no chance for us. We were too different. I'm a hot mess. And Matul? Well, let's just say that between his charismatic personality, insane good looks, and intelligence, he's just too perfect. To top it off, he's nice. Like, really nice. Everyone loves him. Babies, kids, adults. Hell, even my own family likes him better than me. Matul is the kind of gifted and blessed man you stand behind, lingering in his shadow, instead of by his side or standing out in front of him and shining on your own merits. No matter what you do, it will always pale in comparison to his blessed life. It's not his fault. It's just who he is. On the other hand, I'm a walking disaster. I'm far from being anything a man like him deserves or needs. He owns his brownstone, paid cash. He has a retirement account and a good job. I barely make rent some months, kill plants, and drink expired coconut milk. I'm definitely not for him. That hasn't stopped him from trying over the years. Another good quality about Matul, he doesn't give up. 15 years later,
He's still my best friend, my rock. He pushes me to be a better person. He always does the right thing. He loves his friends and family with all his heart. He works hard, loves his patients, and never complains. But my favorite thing about him is that mosquitoes leave me alone when I'm near him because they all bite him instead. Now that's true friendship. Don't feel too badly for him. He's the kind of guy most women would drop to their knees for. And they do. There is no lack of appreciation in his divine life. Trust me. I can't believe you had to fly home to India to accept an invitation in person to your own sister's wedding. It's insane. I relax into the couch cushion. A 22-hour flight is no joke, he grunts. Her wedding is 5 days long. He sits back, matching my position, and with his free hand flattens his palm on the top of my head, burying his fingers in my hair. I can't believe you aren't coming with me. Who is going to make fun of my crazy family with me? You'll be just fine without me. I won't be. I roll my eyes at him. It will be good for you to spend time with your family. You rarely go back. For good reason, he points out. When I do, my parents introduce me to my future wife. Every time. It's amazing how many future wives I've met. Well, if you weren't living like a heathen here in the States, you'd be married. He laughs. It's their fault for sending me to medical school here. Given my dating record right about now, an arranged marriage sounds perfect. Don't be culturally distasteful, Miss Wade. His fingers tighten in my hair. My eyes narrow as I look at him. Don't deflect, Dr. Shaw. His eyes warm to an almost dark chocolate color. His 5 o'clock scruff on his face is always present. Matul's warm skin and blinding smile just make him even more attractive. I swear the man is a walking advertisement for a sexy, exotic male doctor. At one point, I tried my hand at more with him. It was the summer after graduation. I'd just gotten back from a semester in Paris, and I was at a low place in my life. I was broken, shattered. A million different pieces looking back at him. I had given up. He saved me. Literally. He put me back together, made me whole again. Matul was getting ready to leave for his residency, though, and one night we both got drunk. Really, really drunk. And ended up in bed. It wasn't that the sex was terrible. It wasn't. It was fine. Nice, even. Comfortable and familiar. Things just got weird for me after, like, super weird. It took months and his leaving for San Francisco for me to be able to look him in the eyes again. Eventually, we managed to get back to a good place, one where we were before that night. 2 years ago, he moved back to New York, and the rest is best friend history. I clear my throat. You sure you're okay holding on to my stuff while I'm gone? He leans in closer.
Yes. Stop worrying, Rebel.
Letting a long breath of air whoosh out of my lips, I nod. I had to sublet my furnished apartment due to a freelance writing assignment I was given unexpectedly, which means all my personal items are boxed up and stored in his empty basement for safekeeping. I'm not worrying. I trail off. Not into this assignment.
Hey.
He dips his chin, catching my eyes.
I'm proud of you. I know it wasn't the big promotion you had expected, but it will still be good for your writing career. Even if you are going to be gone for a few months and miss my sister's kick-ass 5-day wedding.
Months, I cringe. I can't believe they gave Caitlin the managing editor position. I knew she didn't want the assignment, but I was completely blindsided when they stuck me with it. Gary positioned it as if it were this amazing opportunity instead of a second-place consolation prize. I sulk. He should have just said, "Sorry, you're not good enough to be a managing editor for the magazine, but hey..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?